Coming up on Tech News Today, which iPhone rumors are real? What's inside the Samsung watch? And the NSA causes Grocklaw to quit the web again. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, August 20th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used Samsung Galaxy iPhone and other smartphones are worth at gazelle.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zachter.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world, put them in some context for you, starting with the top 10 of the day. We like to call it the News Fuse. We like to.
Sometimes.
Big news is spinning out of GamesCon. Microsoft announced 23 titles to launch along with the Xbox One in November, including Battlefield 4, Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag, Dead Rising 3, and Peggle 2, among others. FIFA 14 is one that will come free with pre-orders of the Xbox One in Europe. Microsoft also unveiled a developer community called ID at Xbox that will let qualified game developers publish games on the console in 13 markets.
Because of concerns of privacy and government surveillance, Pamela Jones is shutting down her site Grocklaw, which focused on unjust legal action in the tech domain. Jones started her site a decade ago, taking on the SCO Group's legal attack on IBM and others involving Linux and Unix intellectual property. She says, quote, "There is now no shield from forced exposure," and went on to explain that Grocklaw depended on collaboration over email and that, quote, "There is now no private way, evidently, to collaborate."
TiVo made its latest DVRs available starting today. Say hello to the Romeo, Romeo Plus, and the Romeo Pro. Now, Romeo is spelled R-O-A-M-I-O, as in wandering around, because these devices will eventually bring built-in Slingbox-like functionality. Recordings on these DVRs will be accessible via your iOS device using the TiVo Stream app, even when you're outside of your local network. However, the function will not roll out until October or November. The Romeo line gives you 4 to 6 tuners depending on the model, and prices range from $200 to $600. That price, though, does not include the separate TiVo subscription for an electronic program guide.
Wherefore art thou so expensive, Romeo? Barnes & Noble did an about-face announcing they will continue to make Nook Color tablets like the Nook HD along with e-ink readers, which they said they would continue to make. Barnes & Noble announced in June they had ceased manufacturing the tablets by the end of the year, but instead they now promise a new tablet in time for the holidays. Barnes & Noble had a disappointing quarterly earnings report, including a 20% drop in Nook Division's sales. Chairman Leonard Riggio also announced that he was suspending his attempt to buy out the retail side of the company.
Google has introduced its first integrations between Google Maps for mobile and its newly owned property, Waze. The traffic tab on Google Maps for iOS and Android now includes accidents, construction, road closures, and other incidents reported by Waze users. Meanwhile, the Waze app now supports Google Search, and Waze map editors will have access to Google Street View and satellite imagery as well.
Guardian editor Alan Russ Bridger says that after pressure from the British government, he agreed to allow government officials to destroy hard drives containing data provided by Edward Snowden, located in the Guardian's London offices, so the publication could continue to cover the ongoing NSA story. Now, Russ Bridger told BBC Radio 4 that he tried to explain to officials that the data is located in more than one place and destroying the London hard drives would be pointless. Nevertheless, the UK government communications headquarters supervised the destruction of those drives in the basement of the Guardian. Russ Bridger says the Guardian will continue to cover the Snowden documents, but not from the London office.
EA announced the Origin Great Game Guarantee, letting its customers return a game purchased online through its Origin service for any reason. Customers will have 7 days from the date of purchase or from the release date, in case of pre-orders, to get their money back unless they've launched the game to try it out, in which case they'll only have 24 hours to return it.
Phyllis Schreck, a senior executive with Intel's McAfee antivirus software division, has been named the top cyber official at the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. I was very excited about that. DHS Secretary Janet Napolitano on Monday named Streck the new Deputy Undersecretary for Cybersecurity in the department's National Protection and Programs Directorate. Streck, Chief Technology Officer for McAfee's Global Public Sector Unit, has worked in security and infrastructure protection for more than 14 years.
Prenda Law, a company used by many media companies to track down copyright violators online, seems to have been using a honeypot to catch some of those offenders. As part of discovery in the case of AF Holdings versus Patel, records were subpoenaed from Comcast for a BitTorrent user called SharkMP4. The IP address returned by Comcast was associated with the account of Steele Hansmeier PLLC, another company name associated with Prenda's John Steele. Prenda could argue that IP addresses are not identities, but then their entire business plan would fall apart.
Garmin announced a new line of action cameras called the Verb and the Verb Elite. Unlike the GoPro, these Verb cameras come with an always-on 1.4-inch display. Garmin claims you can get 3 hours of 1080p recording out of these ruggedized cameras. The low-end model costs around $300. The higher-end Elite will cost $400 and will launch in September.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Gazelle. You want a little extra money in your pocket, ladies and gentlemen? Gazelle is one of the easiest ways I've ever found to do it. What you do is you take your phone. You got an old iPhone you're ready to replace, or an old Samsung phone, or even tablets. They're buying Asus tablets. They're buying Surface tablets. And, of course, Samsung tablets and Apple tablets. Go to gazelle.com. Put in the name of your gadget. Find out what it's worth right now. The best part about this is you lock in the quote for 30 days. So that gives you time to get whatever new gadget you're replacing. Go find out, you know, how much you're going to pay, get your data off and all of that stuff. When you're ready within that 30-day window, you still get the same price you got at the beginning of when you first entered it. So there's no reason not to do it today because your gadget's probably not going to get more valuable. And then when they get it, they look at it, turn it around in a couple days, pay you by PayPal, pay you by check. Or actually, if you ask for an Amazon gift card, they'll give you a 5% bonus. How about that? Samsung Galaxy S2s, Galaxy S3s, all the iPhones, iPhone 4, iPhone 4S. Find out what your iPhone, Samsung, and other Android smartphones are worth. Take a minute. Go to gazelle.com. Put in that tablet, too. Find out what it's worth. Sell your used Samsung Galaxy or iPhone today at gazelle.com. We thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Joining us now to discuss the stories in our roundtable segment, Rich DeMuro, tech reporter at KTLA, back on the show. Good to have you back, Rich.
Hey, good to be here. And I am sitting at a round table, so it makes this very official.
See, now I feel like a hypocrite because my table's really kind of oblong. It's rectangular, so I'll work on that. You've shown me up once again with your tables. All right. No, it's great to have you, Rich. Let's start off talking about the surveillance stories. We had a couple of them there in the news fuse. One about Pamela Jones shutting down Grok Law. It's not the first time Pamela Jones has shut down Grok Law. She said that she was done with it about 3 years ago. Then she backpedaled and said she was going to hand over running the site to another person. Then she backpedaled and she ended up co-editing, which she's been doing since then. Grok Law sort of built its reputation fighting the SCO battle. She launched the site back in 2003. But now she's saying she's going to get off the internet, and she's talking particularly about email. She says for email, she's going to use Colab, which is, in her words here, which is located in Switzerland and hence is under different laws than the U.S., laws which attempt to afford more privacy to its citizens. Now, compare that. We also had that story about Alan Rusbridger destroying the hard drives in the basement for The Guardian. Glenn Greenwald is the reporter who's been revealing most of the Snowden information. His husband, David Miranda, was stopped in Heathrow Airport for 9 hours and interrogated. His electronics were seized. He gave his first interview to The Guardian yesterday and said, "I felt the weight lift off my shoulders as soon as I got back. Brazil feels very secure, very safe. I knew my country would protect me." There's also the stories we've previously reported on of LavaBit shutting down its service, of secure email services shutting down. These all seem to be the definition of a chilling effect. Now, right now, we could say these are isolated examples, but there seems to be more coming every time. Rich, do you think this is going to seriously change the way people use the internet?
I could speak from a journalistic standpoint. It just seems like it's kind of scary that, you know, you used to be able to think that you could say whatever you wanted, free speech, whatever. And it just seems like that has taken a little step backwards with all of these recent events. And the fact that she's shutting down this site because she just feels like she can't be safe running it anymore, it kind of scares me, because you feel like in this world we can say what we want in most countries and or in many countries. And the fact that she doesn't think that anymore, and here's someone who's been on the cutting edge of all this, that's scary to me. So, and the fact that she's going offline totally, said she's going to, you know, minimize her use of the internet is also really interesting from coming from someone who's really fought to expose these unjust things going on in the tech world.
Also kind of interesting that after all of the time that she spent and collaborated with others, she still feels like email is really the only way to do this correctly, and we can't feel safe via email. So the solution is to just stop doing something that we've put our hearts into and a lot of people have enjoyed and read.
I doubt this is going to make a huge difference for, I guess, the majority of people, because I don't know how many people are fighting this Go lawsuit. That huge mess, that was a great story. And the fact that somebody was covering it and finding out there's basically a bunch of garbage was really intriguing. But for the, I think the vast majority of users, there might not be willing to switch and try to minimize their offline life, as smartphones have become so prevalent. Every single app, every single thing you do is online at this point. And so I don't know if it's going to have a huge effect. I think people maybe will look at the privacy settings on their devices, and then maybe that doesn't mean much because it doesn't matter anyway. It looks like we're always being spied on. So I don't know if the vast majority of people are going to actually change their behavior based on what's happened.
And yeah, I agree with that.
This idea that we're seeing here reflected of like, well, I'm going to use a service out of Switzerland, or I'm happy to be in Brazil, is a little unsettling, because we usually think of the United States as being one of the freer countries on earth. At the same time, Alan Rusbridger from The Guardian, when they were destroying those hard drives, said, well, look, you know, we're going to just operate the story outside of The Guardian, out of the UK right now. And one of the things he pointed out is in the United States, you actually have First Amendment protection. There's no prior restraint. He said what the UK has been doing is effectively prior restraint. So the United States does have the First Amendment on its side. But it seems like it's under attack, and there's a what I'm wondering is this just sort of a news cycle outrage that's going to happen and it's all going to settle down, or are we going to see this as a domino effect? Are more companies going to say, you know, we're not going to do our cloud storage there? Are more individuals going to stop using email and change of behavior? Sounds like you guys don't think it's really going to have an effect, because most people just kind of continue doing what they're doing and figure they're not that interesting.
I think companies like Google will keep pushing to have more transparency when it comes to requests. But I think one of the bigger issues is that a lot of this stuff is done in secret. And it was only until fairly recently that we found out that all the secret stuff was happening. So the First Amendment might be protecting us in general. But when everything is being done in secret, you have no idea that you can actually do something about it. Or you're being told you can't do anything about it in the U.S. So I think that's just, it's just one of these like weird, yeah, there's protection, but everything's in secret at the same time.
And I think when it comes to like personal privacy, like, yeah, we understand now. I think this has definitely thrust privacy into the forefront of the conversation. Obviously, it's been going on for a while now. But I think that the average person just kind of thinks like, well, A, they go down the line of, I'm not doing anything wrong, so I don't really care, so I don't really get involved in this. Or B, you know, it's just the inconvenience factor is so high to use a different service other than Gmail, or to try to do things in a different way, that I think most people just discount it after a while. And, you know, that's sort of what's happening here, it seems like.
Well, it's a good thing we have rumors to distract us and take our minds off of these problems, right, Sarah?
Yeah, although they seem like somewhat ironclad rumors at this point. Sources are telling the Wall Street Journal, as we've heard already, that Honhai, which of course is the large iPhone manufacturer, shipping two phones in September. So this would definitely match up with the pretty persistent rumor that on September 10th, we're going to see a new iPhone announcement. But Apple has never actually launched two different types of iPhones at the same time. I mean, you have maybe two iPhone 5s that have different storage capacities, but not a iPhone 5S, as it's being called right now, which would be it would make more sense if it's following naming conventions like iPhone 4, 4S, but also this lower cost, aka the plastic iPhone, which is rumored to be a lot cheaper, would be important for emerging markets, also come in a variety of colors for folks that are interested in that. But wait, there's more. 9to5Mac has a source that says they have actually used an iPhone 5S that was gold. Actually, more like a champagne color. The whole idea is that the front of it would still be white. So you couldn't go gold and black. It'd have to be gold and white. It's not really a gold gold, but more of, yeah, a muted champagne color. But it would really just be the backs and the sides of the iPhone. So, I mean,
is it more of a champagne or a cava, do you think? Sparkling wine.
Tom, that's clearly not a cava. Although that,
I've got a champagne phone and beer pockets now.
Well, I've got a white iPhone here, so it's like, okay, well, I understand that it would be gold rather than silver, basically, on everything but the front, but I don't really look at most of it besides most of the time, this is what I'm doing, so I don't know if it makes a huge deal.
But what other people see.
Yes, exactly.
Holding.
It's what other people see. Aha, and gold is, mm-hmm. It's been thrown around as gold is a popular color in China. Obviously, Apple wants to make bigger inroads into the Chinese marketplace. Of course, we're hearing more and more that a fingerprint scanner may indeed be included on the home button. This would probably be based on tech from the company Authentec, which Apple had acquired. And then that iOS 7 for iPad is lagging behind a little bit, may not ship with the iPhone version because, at least on the developer side, iOS 7 for the iPhone just started before the iPad, so it's just farther along. And it might just make sense for Apple to hold off on iOS 7 for iPad until we get a new iPad announcement, which just may not happen in September at all. All right, so I want to ask you guys, does any of this sound fishy, or do we feel like Apple rumors just, you know, Apple can't really keep anything secret anymore? Rich, what do you say?
I used to think that these rumors were totally untrue, and now I just believe everything, because it seems like almost every event they have, literally, we've heard almost everything they announced. So the gold iPhone, I think that it might be gold. They might also have different colors as well. I think especially in the smaller model, if we see that, we might see a variety of colors. It just seems to go hand in hand. You've got this smaller, more inexpensive model that comes in various candy colors, gold being one of them. I think if they do the fingerprint scanner, I think it'd be awesome. I think that's, you know, they were the first to do the swipe to unlock your phone, and they really revolutionized that process. And, you know, because they're the first full touchscreen. So I think this is the next logical extension to that, because we've gotten tired of unlocking our phone every time. And if you can literally just hold your thumb there, and I think that's what the big question is how good is this? I'm sure with Apple, if they're doing it, it's going to be great. You hold your phone there for a second. We used to have the Motorola Atrix like 2 years ago that had this feature on it on the back. You know, you had to slide your phone down the back or your finger down the back. Not really that impressive. This, if they do it right, could really save you a lot of time and make your phone much more secure. And we know in the days of our privacy at risk nowadays, any little security we can have is better.
This is the most boring Apple rumor cycle I think I may have ever experienced. You've got Renee Ritchie, MG Siegler, Clayton Morris, all insisting that their sources say that various of these rumors are true, so that we have reputable people saying these are going to happen. And you really don't have any of the crazy stuff out there, the stuff where you're like, well, I don't know, that might be interesting, but I doubt they'll do that. It seems like we really just know everything. I guess the champagne gold color is the craziest of the rumors, but that seems pretty credible at this point.
And also just not that big a deal. I mean... Really, like,
it's a departure for
no
Apple.
One's gonna, but, are people really going to get up in arms over the fact that if I get a new phone, I can have a muted gold back?
Well, I think the thing is that you can actually show that you have a new phone, right? That's the thing.
That's exactly why I got a white iPhone to start with, the iPhone 4.
Like Rich was saying, like the people who will see it is the people that are looking at it, not you. When you're actually looking at the screen, you'll be like, hey, what's that phone? Apple has this history of changing the colors that everyone ends up using. Remember when they went to silver with their MacBooks? Everybody went to silver. Then they brought back black, and then everybody did black again. So who's doing gold? Not a lot of companies. Maybe if they go with that champagne color, you have that immediate, oh, I know what product that is. Because at this point, every single phone kind of looks the same. Mm-hmm. You got the same rectangular interface. You've got a big piece of glass and maybe a button, maybe three buttons, maybe no buttons. But there's a unique color to Apple. They can at least start saying, okay, you guys are copying us, because there's no way on earth anybody's going to bother with this color. People are saying it's easier to do for anodization for the aluminum. So maybe that's a reason to do it, but I think it's a cheesy color.
When was the last time Apple did something because it was easy? I don't really agree with that part of it.
iPod Mini was gold, and it was anodized.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing is 90% of people slap the ugliest case you've ever seen in your life on this beautiful device. Mm. So I don't... It's a weird... It's just odd that this would be such a big deal. I mean, it doesn't impress me, but I think what you're saying about the fact that it sets you apart, it lets you finally realize, like, okay, that's the iPhone 5S or that's the iPhone 6, whatever it is. versus current models, you know, you have to look if the person's using a bigger phone or a smaller phone. And if you see the other versions, you just can't really tell. But I'm not sure that's the motivation behind Apple doing this. Maybe they just wanted to offer different colors. And gold does seem like a pretty logical fit for this company who specializes in beautiful stuff.
Let's get into a real rumor, all right? Yeah. Ayaz, let's talk about the Galaxy Gear watch. This thing gonna make calls? We keep hearing this? Yes? No? What's going on?
All right, so it comes in gold. No, because that's not true. Giga Ohm's O'Malley's got a bunch of details, or he says he's got a bunch of details about the upcoming Galaxy Gear smartwatch. On the hardware side, he's saying it's that developers have gotten a whole bunch of variations of the watch design. However, all of them had square OLED screens. The watch face is around 3 inches. The screen itself is about 2.5, 3 inches with that case. Inside, dual-core processor, which should allow for decent battery life. The strap itself would have an integrated camera. The clasp of the watch would have tiny speakers built in. It's got NFC, Bluetooth 4.0, and an accelerometer that allows the watch to turn on when you move it up towards your eye. That should also help with battery. On software, though, the Galaxy Gear watches apparently are based on Android 4.1 and 4.2. A lot of syncing between your tablets, phones, and watches because there's a watch manager application. If you're looking at an email on your watch, when you go to your phone, that same email will be queued up in that same spot where you were looking at. The connection is going to use Samsung's proprietary accessory protocol and use Bluetooth as well as the network transport. Ohm sources say that the apps for the watch will come from Samsung's App Store and not Google Play. And as for Tom's mention of whether it's going to be a phone or not, apparently it will not be able to make phone calls on its by itself. It would have to be paired with a device to do that, because Samsung actually has made watches that are phones with SIM cards and things, just not a global release. Ohm says that Samsung will launch the product and possibly a pop-up store in Times Square in Berlin, the IFA event in Berlin, and an additional event in New York on September 4th, 2013. So we've got like specific dates on a rumor here. Rich, assuming any of this is true or all of it's true, are you going to get one of these? Are you actually psyched to get this?
I'm not psyched, but I see more and more the appeal of one of these devices. So at first, I was kind of like, no way. I'm one of the few people that still wears a watch. I wear a classic watch. I've tried the various, you know, the one from Motorola that looks like a watch. I've tried I haven't tried the Pebble. But at first, I was totally not cool on these. If this one has the features that accelerometer. So, I mean, if it has more of the fitness features, too, that you can maybe add to it, I think that's kind of cool to track what you're doing. I know that's built into the latest Samsung phones. It's cool. I think they'll sell a couple of them if they do it right, because I think the world is finally ready for something like this. I think we're all sick and tired of taking our phones out of our pocket every 5 minutes to see what's going on. But then again, the Pebble made such a splash, and I can't tell you one person I know that has one of those. So I'm kind of on the fence on this one. Depends how well they do it.
How about you, sir? Are you tired of having a pocket watch like it's the 1800s? Do you want to strap a display on your wrist?
Yeah, I do. I think that would be awesome. I mean, I was on vacation over the last few days, and there were many opportunities to have. I don't know how much, you know, a camera would be integrated in a watch or something, but yeah, you know, I'm always pulling my phone out and try to make sure it's in my purse. At one point, I lost my phone. It was actually attached to me. Maybe as a little necklace or something. I would have been better off. But yeah, the more I hear about this, the more I'm just kind of excited to say, okay, obviously it's not going to be as fully featured as a phone. Mm-hmm. I don't see how that could ever be. We're certainly not in this product cycle. But it will appeal, if it looks cool and works well, to a lot of people who, yeah, we're pretty much dependent on checking our technology on a regular basis. I mean, I check my email every 5 seconds anyway. So, yeah, if it makes it that much easier and it looks nice, I think that's a big part of it for me, then I am interested in this stuff.
Yeah, if it comes in gold, I'd be interested. But any other color, no way.
See, I look better in silver, so if it comes in gold, not buying it.
I want it in a kava, I think.
Trying it out right now.
That's
I like
it.
Wow, it's a strange design. Yeah. Yeah.
Is that the little camera on there? I think I see it.
Everything.
It's in there somewhere. Yeah, it's I don't know. I want to see these products. I want to stop talking about them.
I'm intrigued by the new postures. The new postures. Like, okay, stay right there. Okay, I'm going to take a photo of you. And when I take a call, I got to do this, I guess. If the speaker's in the clasp, I guess you'll hold it up to your head like that.
Maybe, but it's not going to be a phone that way.
Well, no,
right?
it could be a Bluetooth headset, I'd imagine. So if you could have
You imagine. Okay. We're going to just make.
I'm adding a microphone, is what I'm doing, I guess. I just think
it's. I would assume it would have a microphone. Come on. At least it has to have a microphone. It's got to listen to your surroundings to be ready to, do Google Now.
How are you going
to
activate S voice, Tom? Come on, man.
S voice.
I'm not going to activate S voice. I don't even activate Siri or the current Android voice recognition. I'm the wrong person to ask there. Let's talk about IP cloaking, shall we? No, wait, don't fall asleep. This is important. Craigslist versus 3Taps. If you haven't been following this, Craigslist was trying to stop one of 3Taps apps from scraping Craigslist apartment listings and put them on a map. They sent a cease and desist order telling them to stop, and then they blocked their IP range of address so they couldn't go get the data. Well, 3Taps just used a proxy to get around the IP block and scrape the data anyway. Craigslist took them to court. 3Taps put a motion to dismiss, said, look, they got no case here. You know, just because we went around the IP block, that's not a violation of the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, is it? Judge Charles Breyer of the U.S. District Court in Northern California said, nope, actually, that is a violation of the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act because you knew you were doing this. You had received the cease and desist order, and you obviously knew your IP address was blocked, so you had intent. And here's the part that's causing controversy. You circumvented a technological barrier, meaning the IP block. Judge Breyer wrote in his decision, the average person does not use anonymous proxies to bypass an IP block set up to enforce a banning communicated via personally addressed cease and desist letter. This is not a common occurrence. Oren Kerr, writing on the Volok conspiracy blog, which John Brodkin at Ars Technica linked to, said IP addresses are very easily changed and most people use the internet from different IP addresses every day. Is this another example of a judge not getting that an IP address is not an identity? Or does the judge have a point? Like, look, they had a cease and desist letter and then they used an IP proxy. That's not a common occurrence. Rich, what do you make?
I mean, in this particular case, I do think that the judge sort of gets it. And this 3Taps is trying to get around the rules and still trying to get this information. It's kind of like saying if you were banned from going into a store because you bought alcohol there and drank so much of it that you fall down in front of their store all the time, and then you just send your friend in to do the same thing, is that okay? I mean, no, because the end result is you're still falling down outside the store every day. So, I mean, in that case, I see it, and I hope that made sense, but you know, in general, I don't know. Should this be allowed? I don't. It seems like it, you know, they're taking Craigslist information, which I see why Craigslist wouldn't want that. But, you know, at the same time, I think that the case as it stands, the judge sort of understood it. And the judge says, hey, look, Craigslist doesn't want you doing this. You know, Craigslist doesn't want you doing this. You're going around the methods they have put in place to keep you from doing this. And you shouldn't be doing this. So the way it stands, it seems like it is kind of understandable. And by the way, Tom, congratulations for making a very stale story into the most interesting thing I've ever heard in my life. That was well told.
Wow. Thank you. I try. I do think that one of the interesting knock-on effects is probably what has some people concerned is not that the judge is wrong that, look, come on, 3Taps knew they were getting around something here, so they can have intent. Oren Kerr says that's all he needed to show was the intent. He shouldn't have put the circumventing technological barriers because now it can be used as a precedent. And there may be other instances, and 3Taps actually tried to argue this, where people who are doing something perfectly legitimate could be pulled in under the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act because they used a proxy, they used a VPN, they changed their IP address, and that is common occurrence.
I think that would be a broad reading of the opinion. I'm looking at it now, and the quote you mentioned, Tom, it says, in contrast, the average person does not use anonymous proxies to bypass an IP block set up to enforce a banning communicated via a personally addressed cease and desist letter. So as long as all of those things are true, then it might fall under this. But if you're just using a VPN or using a proxy and you haven't received a CND, you should still be fine. It seems like this language is set in here to keep this really limited to this particular kind of case. Because if you don't say this, if you don't say via personally addressed cease and desist, not even any cease and desist, it's a personally addressed one. So you have to have all of these things to be true for the next one to have to go, hey, look at that old case. So I think this language is in here to keep it narrow. So it might have the fear of, oh, it could be for everything. But possibly, I think this language is in here to keep it very, very narrow to this kind of case.
I think that's a really good point for people to remember. I think what did get people nervous is Kerr is right. I don't think he needed to include the technological barrier in there, but it is written very tightly. So I absolutely hope you're right, Ayaz, that no judge ever looks at this and does a broad interpretation of it. But it's It's like Chekhov's gun now. It's laying out there smoking. I've totally made a mash of that metaphor. Let's move on to GoPro.
Sure.
GoPro killer from Garmin.
Yeah, there's a gun, there's a killer, and there, no. So there's a Garmin Verb. This is a rugged action camera. I don't know how to segue out of that. It's a rugged action camera. It's going to compete with the GoPro. It might kill it. We don't know. The Verb captures 1080p wide-angle video, digital image stabilization, takes 16-megapixel stills while recording. It's got a display unlike the GoPro. Garmin's claiming 3 hours of battery life when recording. It also has, if you pair it with like extra sensors, you can have data like your GPS data in there. You can also have heart rate information there, your altitude on the video when you are doing the editing phase, if you would like that. The camera has a waterproof rating of IPX7, which means it can be submerged in water about 3 feet deep for about 30 minutes. Two models, the Elite, which includes Wi-Fi and GPS, and then there's the other one, which you have to pair with a device. Let's see, a separate heart rate monitor if you want to have that heart rate thing like I was telling you. Lower end one is about $300, and the higher one is $400. Garmin's also launching a mobile app for preview, so you can play back and have remote functionality with your phone, and also a free desktop software application to edit and upload Verb and Verb Elite videos. Rich, we've seen Garmin branching out. They've had that HUD display, the heads-up display for cars. It's that little projector that shows you your GPS, and now they're going into the action camera range. What do you think of the expansion?
I think that it's necessary, because if we think of Garmin as a GPS company and a standalone GPS company, that's not really going to last much longer. So when we see that they're using GPS for neat things like this, where when you take these videos, if it's connected to your smartphone, I'm assuming that's how they're getting the GPS info. It'll tag your photo or your video with that. That's pretty cool. It shows them thinking in different ways. The heads-up display is kind of a cool device as well. So at least it shows that this company is saying, hey, we see what the future is bringing, and we're going to try different stuff, and we're going to use our knowledge and our smarts to actually come up with some of this stuff. And this thing, I haven't used a GoPro personally. I have used a little bit of the Sony Action Cam one. I think that this market just continues to expand. People are, you know, YouTube, you want to make these cool videos of you doing cool stuff. And I think that this is a good little market for them to be in. I like the fact that it has a little display. I like that it does the GPS and the Wi-Fi connects to your screen. It wasn't clear to me if you can view the Wi-Fi live on your screen, on your smartphone, which I've seen with it. You can?
Okay,
so I've seen that with a couple of other action cams, and that's pretty cool. It says embedded. So I think that's a cool feature too. It seems like a decent device. I mean, I don't know if it's going to pull a lot of people away from GoPro. It depends on the pricing and availability for this thing. I mean, GoPro is a brand name. Garmin Verb Video, you know, not so much just yet.
Go ahead, Sarah.
I was going to say, I'm surprised that the whole sort of extreme video market has resurged the way that it has. When the GoPro camera first came out, it was like, oh, that's cool. We saw it was like a paraglider or something. It's like, that's kind of neat once. And now it's completely exploded with a lot of really creative videos. I mean, I've got friends who they're not like extreme sports people. They're not scaling mountains, you know, in the desert, but they're putting together videos that are just creative and cool with other existing technology. And if the GoPro does as well as it does, and we've got something like the Verb, I think it's just a matter of time before the Verb is the standard in extreme videoing. I mean, the video that we saw, there were all sorts of videos where it's like, oh, yeah, water skiing. That's pretty cool. Never thought about that. Lots of people water ski. You don't have to be like an extreme sports person.
I like the GPS build, and I think that's really smart for Garmin, obviously, because that's their heritage, and they know they can't continue to sell GPS devices, standalone GPS devices. That market's all but done. So this is a smart way to go, and I love the fact that they're saying, hey, it's waterproof without a case for 30 minutes up to, I think it was 3 feet or something like that. Those are both very good selling factors to me as somebody who's used a GoPro out on vacation. Again, not for extreme stuff, just swimming around and biking around, and I look at that and I'm like, oh, I wouldn't have to put it in a case. That's kind of cool. Oh, it would be able to track where I was. So I would be able to look at that, use that information later. Maybe that's worth the extra money. I like it.
Now, to clarify, the Elite has the GPS and Wi-Fi built in. The lower end model, just called the Verb, that's something you'd have to connect to a phone. That way you can have the GPS data in there. They also have the Elite has the ability to automatically turn on. So like if you're like on a ski lift going up, it won't like register that. But if you're going down a mountain, it'll automatically turn on. So you're not missing those things either. And the thing is, if you start looking at GoPro prices and you're talking about having a display or having extra battery, because they're claiming much more battery life and a higher resolution camera on this device compared to a GoPro. The GoPro prices start adding up when you add a case and you add the battery and you add these things. So I think Garmin, actually, these prices at first look like they're expensive compared to GoPro. But GoPro accessories start bringing that price way up. So the rugged nature of this could make this, I think, a surprise hit.
Yeah, I like the idea that you don't have to have the case on it as well. No, I like the idea you don't have to have the case, but I also think that I just like the trend of where we're going, where we're seeing more features packed into smaller devices and more of the features that you want to see. So, I mean, the fact that this thing is waterproof out of the box, the fact that it's rugged, the fact that it, you know, I think we're obviously our cell phones are probably going to do all this stuff in the future, but this is sort of along that progression, is that we're seeing more features along the lines of, you know, maybe cheaper price a little bit than the GoPro. But the fact that we're able to do this stuff, and as a journalist that does video, when I can pack a smaller camera and into different, more unique places for a cheaper price, that's always a good thing, whether you're a journalist or a lay person that's just, you know, doing something on vacation, or a, you know, an amateur filmmaker. It's pretty cool.
All right. One other company that is constantly challenged with trying to find new ways to have product lines that make them money is TiVo. And we heard about in the news fuse, the Romeo.
Yeah. If you like that, it's R-O-A-M-I-O, just so you know, although it is pronounced Romeo, which is somewhat of an unfortunate name. But this is definitely a fully featured device. For $600 for the DVR, you can record 450 hours of HD programming on 6 channels simultaneously. You can stream that content to iPads over your home Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi anywhere will be coming eventually. There are Netflix, Spotify, YouTube apps that are all very good. In fact, Nilay Patel over at The Verge has a really, really good write-up of all the different features and functionality on the Romeo. Romeo also supports the dial standard used in the Chromecast. So if you've got a movie on your smartphone or a tablet, you want to send it right to the Romeo, you can do that. The Romeo Pro is the top end of the new line of what is basically the Series 5 of TiVo DVRs. The Romeo, there's a baseline model for $200 and then a Romeo Plus for $400. They all have faster processors than their predecessors. They have support for more tuners. They have integrated streaming capability in the Plus and the Pro, built-in Wi-Fi, which is something that people have been waiting for a long time. You've still got kind of your TiVo remote, works using RF for faster response time. So all in all, absolutely a great bump up in the line. But if you're looking at the Pro for the price, you're still only talking about something that can work with a standard cable TV service. If you've got Verizon Fios, if you've got AT&T UVerse, still doesn't work. And apparently, although the HD content is all fine and good, and if you're used to the TiVo menu system, it's going to look nice to you, some of the menus aren't actually in HD, so there's a little bit of a disconnect. Like, why doesn't everything look nice and crisp? Depending on what you're looking at, some of it is SD. It doesn't look that great. Nilay Patel also said he is, you know, the kind of person who can probably set up a DVR okay. And he said he had a really painful installation over the weekend. He says the whole thing relies on what's known as a cable card. The way that works is when you get your TiVo, you insert the card, you call your cable company to basically turn on the card with some activation numbers. He says, for whatever reason, it didn't work in his favor at all. It took him several days. He had to plug in an old cable box in order to watch a new episode of Breaking Bad, and kind of a funny story, actually, but certainly not if it was your story. So if you have Fios, you should be able to activate a cable card online using that code. It's probably the way of the future, but it sounds like for many people, it's not really ready for prime time. Couple this all with the fact that, you know, TiVo service is, it's not just a one and done type of a thing. You're still going to have a monthly subscription fee. For $600, Rich, do you want this beast of a DVR / home streaming solution?
Actually, I kind of do, but I think I'm in the minority, because I have been an early lover of TiVo. I was their biggest fan for many years, when I would only get TiVo DVRs in every person's house I'd go to. I'd frown upon them for having the cable company DVR, and I'd be like, what are you doing? Why do you have that when there's something better out there? But in the last 4-5 years or so, I've really changed tunes, because TiVo is sort of the company that can't get it right. It's like they have the idea. They have this box that says, you know what, we're going to take all this awesome programming from your cable company. We're going to let you ditch their box. We're going to use this cable card that really simplifies it. And we're going to make it really simple and awesome. And we're going to make it so you can put it on your tablet. We're going to make it so you can watch it everywhere else. But every single time they do something, there's a crazy list of caveats. And that's exactly what we're seeing with this device as well, where, you know, it supports the stuff in Chromecast, which, you know, I'd love to see that actually happen. I'm curious if it actually supports everything from Chromecast or just parts of it. We're seeing the base model supports an antenna, an HD antenna, but the two higher-end models don't. So what's the reasoning for that? If I want more storage, why do I have to buy a cheaper model? I don't get that. The cable card thing, whatever. The menu's not being in HD. Why doesn't TiVo just take a weekend, like Nilay said in his piece, and just rewrite the software from start to finish? Just get this thing so that it looks beautiful. And, you know, like the thing, like little things, like Amazon Prime, still you can't get Prime Instant Video on there unless you pay. You know, you can't get your free Amazon Prime Instant Videos on there. Why not? Why can't they take a weekend, sit down with Amazon, talk to them about why that's happening, and fix it? So, yeah, to spend $600 on this DVR plus another $15 a month or $400 for lifetime service, you know, it's just for most people, 99% of people, it just doesn't make sense. Yeah. And that's why they've had issues selling these things.
It almost seems like the specs of, hey, six different channels at once, aren't you amazed? It's like, yeah, that seems like a lot, but I don't think enough people need that. They would rather it seems like a seamless product and doesn't have a weird menu discrepancy. And it seems like it's not really in line with what an actual consumer wants out of a DVR slash.
The best feature is not even available. The streaming to the Wi-Fi to anywhere you are, the Slingbox feature, is not available. So you're going to buy this thing today, and who knows how long it's going to take for TiVo to implement that feature. It doesn't work on Android, apparently. So it's like, why not just do it right the first time, TiVo? Blow us out of the water and make this a device that literally me as a tech person wants this afternoon on my doorstep. But they're not doing that. They're making it so most people are like, yeah, I already record a lot of stuff in my DVR. It works just fine.
But Rich, you said you wanted to get this, right? After you listed everything you just said, you still want one?
I don't know. I'm trying to decide if it's better than what I have. So, I mean, I have a DVR, I have Slingbox, I have access to Netflix and video on demand, and I have a Roku. So, I mean, what does this serve that I don't have right now? And I think the killer feature really is that streaming to anywhere over Wi-Fi, because here's the problem with Slingbox. It's great, but you still have to go through your cable company's DVR menu to get to what you want. Now, if TiVo bypasses that, and because they can communicate straight with the box, and you can call up that show you want to watch just by selecting from a native menu on your iPad, and then the show starts streaming, that's pretty awesome. And that's the big difference I see between this and something like Slingbox.
All right, let's move on to the randomizer. Did a straw poll today for three stories. In third place, robot barista serves up custom cloud-powered coffee. Nobody wanted the robot, 21%. Oldest globe to depict the new world may have been discovered. That's 37%. Not as many cartographers out there as there are people interested in the new tool that lets single server map the entire internet in 45 minutes. That one got 42%. I admit that's pretty impressive. Researchers at the University of Michigan developed a tool that allows one server with a gigabit Ethernet port to scan the internet so quickly it could map 98% of the world's IPv4 connections in less than 45 minutes. Now, why would you want to do this? There's all kinds of reasons. It can help you map efficiency. It can help you determine whether certificate authorities are being used correctly. In one of their scans, they found the Korean government had misused 1,300 certificate authorities. It could trap the adoption of upgraded protocols like HTTPS. Could be used by bad guys, too. They warn about that. There's all kinds of reasons that system administrators and researchers and analysts particularly might want to do this. Are you guys as excited as our audience about this? It's pretty much of a technical feat here, but maybe of limited practical appeal to everyone out there.
I think when we did we did a bunch of stories about certificate authorities and all the trouble that's gone there, if this can be used so that we're not running into fake certificates and things, I wouldn't say it's exciting, but it's definitely useful. That way we're not running into this bogus situation we've had before. So I can't say I'm excited, but practically speaking, I think this will be good.
What if I told you that it can also improve the efficiency of your Ethernet connection so that you get like 97% of the bandwidth out of Ethernet?
Now you got me excited, actually.
There you go. Now you've got us excited. Okay.
now, higher quality broadband video, like higher bit rates for that. That would be.
What if I told you your torrents of legal Linux distros will download it?
I told you that if you're doing torrents and you're bouncing all over the place and you're still more efficient, you'd actually have faster downloads. See, now there you go. Now you're onto something. So this is very exciting.
All right. You know what else is exciting? Things coming in the future. Tell us the future, Sarah.
Well, I'm trying to find out a little bit more about this whole PlayStation event at Gamescom, but there's still
going on.
Yeah, it's sort of a slow rollout, so I don't have a really great synopsis at this point. Obviously, I will by tomorrow. But speaking of tomorrow, HP earnings report is tomorrow. Yay, I know you guys are all really excited about that. But also tomorrow, Gamescom officially starts over in Cologne, Germany, runs through the 25th. AdAge is reporting that iTunes Radio, which is Apple's answer to Pandora, is set to debut next month, and it has quite a few brand partners. You may have heard of some of them, McDonald's, Nissan, Pepsi, Procter & Gamble, to name a few. Sony's PS4 date should be announced any minute now. And Gran Turismo 6, if you want to think about maybe something to buy your loved one for the holidays, is launching on the PlayStation 4 December 6th.
All right, let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
It's from Detroit. A message from James in Detroit who says, "Hey guys, in episode 820, you suggested that Beats Audio should be sold in cars as premium sound like Bose and Sony. They already do. The first car was the 2012 Chrysler 300S, and they have since put it in the Dodge Charger and the North American version of the Fiat 500. It can also be found in Fiats elsewhere. Also, I think it's more trendy than good." Well, thanks, James.
Yeah, good to know that it's in the cars. Thanks for that.
Got another email from Dean in Michigan who says, "I found the Sony Viacom deal somewhat interesting, but I think you may be overestimating its impact. My fear is that cable TV providers, who for many people are also their ISP, may place bandwidth caps in response. I'm sure their justification would be lost revenue from people discontinuing television service will require them to implement bandwidth caps to remain profitable. In my case, I have Comcast, who also owns NBC. Do you think they'd be agreeable to providing their content to such services? On one hand, they could prevent companies like Sony, Apple, Microsoft, etc. from making serious inroads to cable programming. But on the other hand, they get paid from these other services for their content. What do you think?"
Well, we have precedent for selling the content. First of all, they'd sell it to DirecTV and Dish. They may have disputes, but those really don't have to do with the fact that they carry cable companies. They could find more places to sell their content. They'll sell it. I think that one's pretty easy. Whether ISPs change their mind and start going back to bandwidth caps, it's a fair question. It seems like ISPs right now have realized that the bandwidth cap way of monetizing their connections is a dead end. People hate it. And it doesn't seem to work. It doesn't seem to be worth the fight. We've seen them sort of quietly walk away from that. But they haven't totally refuted it. They haven't turned against it. So maybe it would come back. I kind of doubt it, personally. But it's a good question. Thank Dean for writing in. And Rich DeMuro, thank you for being on the show. Always great to have you. Tell folks what you're up to. What's going on?
Let's see. I work at KTLA Television in Los Angeles. I'm also syndicated on morning tech shows across the nation. So if you see me on your local show, I'm actually here in Los Angeles doing the report. You can reach me on Twitter at Rich DeMuro or go to richdemuro.com. You know, just checking out the latest phones every day and all kinds of other cool tech stuff going on.
Excellent. Good stuff over there. KTLA, KTLA.com, richdemuro.com. Also, don't forget about our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com, where you can let us know what stories you'd like us to keep an eye on and cover and maybe discuss on the show. You can vote on the stories submitted by others or submit some of your own. And don't forget about open mic submissions for our special Labor Day episode. If you are available on Wednesday, August 28th at 9 a.m., that's when we'll record the show, send an email to tnt@twit.tv with the subject line open mic by Thursday, end of day, August 22nd. And then we'll set it up and we're going to have a few of you guys on the show like we do usually during the holidays in December, except we're going to do it midway through. It's our labor of love for you. I will be back in the studio tomorrow, but there will be no Jason Howell. He's off camping.
That's right. And
that's okay. We're going to miss you, though. Sarah Lane will be here. Ayaz Akhtar will be here. You can always find us at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us tnt@twit.tv and give us a call. Leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. And David Spark will be joining us tomorrow as well. We'll see you then.